Thank you all for sticking in there and not falling asleep yet. I teach a three-hour lecture class, so I'm kind of used to students nodding off by about this time, so I appreciate that. As Tristan mentioned, my name is Amy Eiler from Washington University in St. Louis, and this presentation is on one of our work group projects from the Physical Activity Policy Research Network. So I just wanted to, I have no conflicts to disclose. I'll give you a second to read that for protocols purposes. The Physical Activity Policy Research Network was formed by CDC in 2004, and it really has to do with the shift in focus from individual intervention to policy intervention. Policies are more sustainable. They reach a greater number of people than these individual interventions, and as the first presentation indicated, it's a big presence in these federal grants, CPPW and CTG grants. So what about physical activity? How can policies affect physical activity? Well, I have listed here several categories where physical activity policies can have an impact. Community policies on access to parks or trails, transportation policies such as bike lanes or sidewalks, school policies, probably the most recognizable physical activity policy, recess and PE, I have research on the brain, and healthcare policies. There's no little checkbox when a physician counsels you on physical activity. So that code, that ICD-9 code that a physician can turn in to get reimbursed doesn't exist for physical activity policy. So a policy like that can really change in the healthcare realm. And workplace policies, things like flex time, facilities on site can also impact physical activity. So as I mentioned, PAPRN was funded in 2004 through the CDC Prevention Research Center program, and Washington University in St. Louis and the Prevention Center in St. Louis is the lead site for this. We have 10 PRCs, only five of which are funded, and then six affiliate centers. So these are investigators at different universities who all come together using similar methods, but we do the research across the country from Hawaii to St. Louis to Seattle to San Francisco. It increases the generalizability of our results by having these different sites. And we're currently in our eighth year of funding, so we're pretty excited about that. So this is a work group project that came out of the PAPRN. We wanted to study public perception of policies on physical activity and obesity in a broader sense. From another study, we looked at, and we found that there was a big disconnect in what people thought about, policymakers thought about, stakeholders thought about, and even researchers thought about the priority of policies that can affect physical activity. So John Kingdon, political scientist, has this theory, there has to be an open window, a window of opportunity, and all these things have to make a perfect storm, which I know that's a really bad analogy right now, but so there has to be a problem. Not only does there have to be a problem, the public has to be aware that there's a problem. And also there has to be a policy solution to that problem. What can be done at a policy level to impact that problem? And another caveat of that is that solution, that policy solution, needs to be an acceptable one to the constituents or the population as a whole. And then there's this whole thing about politics. What's the environment like? What's the environment like in your state about the T word, the taxes? I come from Missouri, lowest tobacco tax in the entire country. So you don't say that word in our state. So political mood and those things. So when you have all these three things on your side, there's a problem. The public is aware of it. They support what you want to do, and there's a good political mood. That's when that window opens, and you can step in and do something as far as policy is concerned. This is from another study that we did, and we interviewed policymakers and advocates within the same states to talk about their perceptions of this was obesity policy. And there was this humongous disconnect between what the legislators thought and these were state-level legislators and the advocates thought. The legislators are like, no, it's not a priority. It's economy, jobs, and housing. That's what's a priority, not obesity. But the advocates were saying, we have built it up. Yes, it is a priority. So there was this, you know, why is that disconnect there? That's something that we want to know, which kind of led to this study. This is from a Pew Research Center poll. Out of these 22 categories, they asked representative sample of the population, which is your top priority? So see where obesity is, down at the very, very bottom at 19%. But then I've got to think, well, what if it was 5%? We don't have a baseline. What if it was 5% 2 years ago and it went up 19%? That's a victory. Even though it's still at the bottom of the list, the advocates are right. Maybe we are increasing. And another Pew Research Center study took it a step further and asked, should government have a significant role in reducing childhood obesity? A lot of the things would include both nutrition and physical activity. And what this slide shows is there's some differences in support for these kind of things, where there's differences by race, ethnicity, by age. The younger the person, the more likely they were to say that the government should support these things. And then the obvious ones, if they identified themselves as Democrats, they were more likely to support it. So these are our research questions for the survey that I'll talk about the results. What are the patterns of support for policies relating to physical activity? We separated them into two distinct categories, school policies and community policies. From previous research, we found that there's kind of distinct support for both of those categories. So we divided them up into two different sections. But then I wanted to know about this taxes. People can say till they're blue in the face that, yes, they support PE in school, but when you ask them, would you support a tax increase to have daily PE in your school, would they still support it? And that's what we were interested in, taking that tax, analyzing with and without the tax questions. This was a new area, so we had to build kind of a new survey. We used existing scales where we could. We pulled questions from research, and our whole team of 16 sites had input into this study. And we pilot tested it, and we finally came up with 74 questions, 8 sections with a bunch of skip patterns. We wanted to keep it to about 20 minutes. This was a phone survey. So this was our sample. We wanted to get some variability in the sample, so we decided to use the CDC estimate, the county estimates of physical inactivity and obesity. So we lined those up together, the county, inactivity, and obesity, and we took the top third and the bottom third. So what we ended up with was 172 counties that were low obesity, low physical inactivity, and then about, I can't even remember, 700 counties that were high obesity and high inactivity. So the blue are the low. I know. Look at how it the pattern goes here. And then the red are high. So there's that one little area in Maine that's kind of odd, don't you think? But that was our sample. And this probably would have been a whole lot easier to do, but it would have been pretty biased. We also did some proportion to size sampling. So the counties that had a large population, we stratified the counties by population. So we decided that for this survey, we would do a telephone survey. And based on budget and time and what we wanted to do for analysis, we realized we needed about 1,200 completed surveys. We wanted 600 in those low counties and 600 in the high counties. And then speaking with a firm that does phone surveys as a business, they suggested to dabble in the cell phone call, the cell phone lines. He said, the man at Clearwater Research said, if you choose 100% landline, you will end up with data from old ladies. I took his word because that's what he does for a profession, and doggone it, we bought cell phone numbers to try to get some data from that. But how many people in this room? We were trying to match data to counties. How many people in this room have a cell phone number that has an area code that doesn't match your county? That's why this kind of failed, because so many people don't have those. The data was collected August through November 2011. We did some computations. We added some questions together, made some scales of support. It was self-reported BMI and self-reported physical activity. Our statistician helped us with this polygamous proportional odds modeling using this multi-level model with an ordinal scale dependent variable, which was the support scales, and then we looked at a bunch of independent variables. The community walk score, there was a 5-question how walkable is your community, and we added those together and used that as one independent variable. So after a lot of money and a lot of pain to get what we needed. We got 1,218 completed surveys. But look at the number of random digit dialing numbers that we had to purchase to get this. So almost 60,000 landlines and over 10,000 cell numbers. It's about 40 cell numbers to one completed survey. The response rate was awful for the cell numbers. It's just, I think that the telephone survey is going to the wayside as a way to collect data. But hindsight is 2020. We did get some good data from this, but the landline was okay for response rate. So what are the patterns of support for policy? This just gives you a general idea of who answered our survey. And I highlighted in green some of the differences. Again, mostly older people, large proportion were women, so that 55 to 74 age category. Most were employed, full or part-time or homemaker, student, retired. And the sample was made up of a pretty good proportion of highly educated people. So, and this just keeps going on the descriptor. So we had very little racial ethnic variability. And the overweight obese rates were similar to national rates for 2009. But the exercise, we had really physically active people answer our survey, especially the moderate. If you look at the national data, it's reverse of what we had. There are more people who meet the moderate recommendation versus vigorous. So this is, did I back up? Okay, school support. So these are the questions that we asked for school support, and this is just the basic frequencies that we got from these questions. And overwhelmingly, people support daily physical education in the 80s or 90s. The lowest is daycare, and I think that's just because it's not that set mindset like a school PE program. Daycare is variable. Is it a home daycare? Is it a place where you take your kid after school? So I think that was a little bit confusing. We didn't have a definition with that. Everybody loves recess, everybody but 4% of the population about. So 96% thinks that elementary schools should require daily recess. And then we asked two more questions, one about joint use and one about safe routes to school. And still, the support was pretty high, 71% and 80%. And we kept keeping in mind that a policy only needs 50, majority to pass 51%. So, for the community policies, should cities be required to accommodate pedestrians and cyclists when improvements to streets are made? And that's the complete streets sort of definition. 87% said yes. Do you think cities should allocate funds for building and maintaining places in your community where people can exercise? About 87%. Here's where it drops a little bit. So would you support a tax increase in your city for the building or maintenance of these facilities? 61% said yes. And then do you think your city should allocate funds for maintaining public transit, which is really an emerging correlate to physical activity, especially transportation physical activity. And then when asked, would you support a tax increase to build or maintain public transportation, barely squeaked in 50% on there. So those were frequencies. Now when we did the modeling of it, this is what we came up with. And this is with all the questions together. So men were less likely to be supportive of schools. We added those school support. If they said yes, it was a 1. If they said no, it was a 0. And we added them together. Age, just barely significant for that. But it was the younger you were, the more likely you were to have a higher support scale. And then education. It mattered. If you were more educated, you were more likely to have a higher support scale. Things like BMI and if they met physical activity recommendation did not emerge as significant. So community policies, again, very similar. Race was an indicator in this one that was not in the school one, and the community walkability score also proved as significant in this model. So then we took the tax questions out, and we wanted to see if there was a difference there. So this is the school. Oh, no, this is the community. So for the community support without those tax questions, and really similar, we didn't see a difference in what types of variables predicted that. So summary, there was less variation in school policy support. sex, age, and education were consistently significant in predicting this level of support in both school and community physical activity policies. And race and community walkability score were significant predictors of community policy support, both with and without the tax questions. We thought we were going to see a bigger difference without those tax questions. So what does this mean for advocacy? There's going to be low-hanging fruit. Some things are going to be easier to pass than others. Issues that are less likely to be supported might take more time and effort and more of that advocacy effort and more starting at that low level of the 22 things that I listed at the beginning. So who can we target for policy support? Identify that policy that you want to work on and identify who can help you garner that support in the community or in the state, and what groups can be advocates. That's also very important. So if you were doing school things, you'd want all the groups that would be stakeholders within schools, parents, administrators, students, and then community would be the whole host of people that would have an effect on the community physical activity. And then to what groups should awareness and policy support messages be tailored? We also learned that different groups need information in different ways. Are they going to read a peer-reviewed journal? Absolutely not. They need two sentences, elevator speech for the most part, and providing research to advocates so they can translate it and get to the policymakers is a really a good idea for increasing the support. So next steps, we need more analysis with this data. This is a new survey. Was it the best? Were they the best questions? Was it the best scale? I don't know. We're doing some modeling right now with the statistician who really likes to do that kind of stuff. So we're going to see if you're doing some detailed analysis to see if the questions cluster together. And really, we want to look at some employment and worksite policy analysis, which we didn't do for this presentation, but have some data on. And then, as I mentioned, the structural equation modeling for scale factors. And then we need to disseminate this to various varied audiences like this and talk about our lessons learned. Phone surveys, don't do them. It was very expensive. That's all I would say. And nail biting, because the survey company would call me and say, we need to buy more numbers. We don't have enough numbers. And we really wanted to reach that 1,200. And then just timeline and planning this, how long these things can take. And then the survey development, and I'd be willing to share with you the tool that we developed, and if you have any information or that we could share and really develop something good to measure this kind of support for these policies, I think that would really advance the field. So I guess there's one more presentation, so ignore that slide.